Hi, I'm Matt.
I'm Mabel.
And I'm Mitch.
And you're listening to Sex Ed and Chill. Today we're talking about Season 4, Episode 8 of Sex Education, the finale of the season and of the series as a whole. So we're not going to do a topic today, we're just going to focus on what's happened. But some arcs for this episode specifically. This was also an Otis apology episode. He's apologized to all of the people and has like healed his relationship with Eric. Maeve has gone back to the US and has had some interest in her writing. Eric is going to be a pastor, question mark. Viv has stood up to Beau and set some really unambiguous boundaries and has the support of her friends with this, which I think is really important. Jackson has kind of learned the truth about his father and is working through it with his mums, which I think is a good resolution. Adam is healing the relationship with his dad and also has a date with Jem, which is exciting. Michael loves Adam, but maybe not himself. Jean is maybe like starting to get a handle on things and taking some control. And Joe has decided to stop running. Amy has taken the next steps with her healing since the assault and is ready to go a bit further with Isaac. Ruby is becoming a better person and has also set some very reasonable boundaries with Otis. O opens up to working with Otis. Abby has learnt the harms of toxic positivity and is getting better at communicating through conflict. And kind of maybe the biggest story of the episode, Cal was in a really bad place. But now, thankfully, seems to have maybe the support that they need. And I'm sure a lot of other stuff happened in the episode. But maybe we should talk about Cal, because we didn't really touch on them much in the last episode. So last episode, we saw that their like dysphoria was kind of stepping up. They had a conversation with Roman about top surgery. And then at the end of the episode, we're not in a good place, and Aisha tried to help out and be like, do you want to do something? I'm here for you, but they kind of just retreated. And then this episode, their mum comes in to find that they're not at home and haven't been for like a day. And this is obviously concerning given their mental state, and kind of the whole episode is people trying to find Cal. And I mean, it's kind of lovely to see the whole school be like, all right, this is what we need to do, and kind of put their minds to it. And it creates a bunch of fun little scenes as part of it as well. But sorry, I didn't ask you, what did you think of this episode as an episode in itself and maybe as the finale? Wow.
I don't know what I think. No. It wasn't a bad thing. I just don't know where I'm at. I can't even hear Mabel.
Yeah. No, I think I quite liked it. I think it did a good job of not only being a final episode, but also being an episode in and of itself. Like, it wasn't just like, everyone put down their pencils now and let's just say goodbye to everyone. Like, it was still an episode and stuff still happened and arcs still progressed. And I think overall, kind of what I like where this season has landed, or the series has landed, is they didn't really bother trying to tie everything up with a neat bow. Like, these people are alive characters that continue to exist beyond these storylines, and some, like, not everything's resolved and life goes on and we're not really going to see it anymore, but I think it would have been really awkward to try and resolve everything. Like, that wouldn't have worked at all, so I'm glad they didn't.
I mean, I agree that not everything is resolved, but I feel like everybody's kind of been put in kind of a good place, almost, if that makes
sense.
To keep
going.
It's like, it's a nice ending, but it's clear that there's still things going to happen afterwards. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting how you put it, Mabel, like that, how it just felt like another episode. Like the main part of this episode just felt like, it didn't feel like a wrap-up, for better or worse, I don't know. Where it just felt like the main chunk was most people searching Cal, and then at the end, with a little bit of sprinkles of people closing their arcs, and then at the end, everything kind of was dumped during the party or whatever it was, like all these moments. Whether or not it worked, I'm still trying to figure out for me.
Yeah,
in terms
I mean,
of,
I think they tried to do some stuff.
Yeah.
Like I remember O and Ruby have a conversation near the dumpsters while everybody's searching, which I think kind of seals off their arc.
Yeah.
There.
Yep.
So I think they tried to sprinkle some. I will say, yeah, at their party, a bunch of stuff happened. But that's true of every season of Sex Education, right? They have
that's
big
true.
Thing at the end of the season and a whole bunch of shit happens all at once.
Yeah.
I think it's like it honestly did feel a lot like a normal episode. And I think maybe like the only thing that really indicated it's the end was sort of how the actual episode ended with this like voiceover, Maeve reading her letter to Otis and her kind of reflecting on their entire relationship. And I think that was maybe a nice way to close it off. Like if you are just going to have another episode and nothing else really like ends, their relationship has certainly ended, at least their romantic one. And I don't know, listening to Maeve talk and eloquently express her thoughts is always nice.
Yeah, it's always fun to listen to this Emma Mackey just talking and talking about intellectual things.
Yeah.
Emotions.
Although, can I just say, like, the start of that letter is her saying she hates being sappy and it's not a love letter, but, like, that's a fucking love letter, surely.
That's a love letter. Yeah.
But yeah, as a whole, I think it worked. I still liked it. It felt like another Sex Education episode. Everyone landed in a good spot and we got a bit of a conclusive statement from Maeve at the end, reflecting on everything. So I don't know how else they, I don't have a better idea for what they should have done as a finale.
Yeah.
It was definitely throughout the season. They were definitely leading up, like with all Cal's dysphoria and like the struggle. It was definitely leading up to this point. Like we can't just say that this just happened out of nowhere. Like they were leading up to it. So they did that well, sprinkling that out throughout the season.
And I also like in terms of choosing what like the big thing is going to be and something that's gone for the entire season and has always been there. And the thing that we're going to focus most of the last episode on is Cal's shitty experience as a, you know, trans non-binary person suffering with dysphoria. I think it's very, very topical at the moment. So, I mean, we talk about this show doing sort of like necessary PSAs all the time. And I think if they're going to choose a big message to sort of go out on, like this seems like a good one given the current cultural climate.
Yeah, especially the UK at the moment.
Yeah.
It's really not a great place to be a trans person in the UK at the moment. So, yeah, I agree. I think it was a good decision as a final message to send. And also, I think thinking about it like that, the kind of the way that the school rallies around Cal is kind of part of the message. It's like, you know, I mean, maybe it's hopeful that most people are supportive in some way, shape or form, and that it's just, you know, governmental and structural barriers that are being put up by a minority who want to control people's lives. And I don't know, the value of that support. I guess it's there's a little bit about the value of being a good friend and ally to people going through this sort of thing.
Although it's a great message that, like, even if you're not close friends with someone, you can still care for them and go search for them like everyone did.
Yeah,
I kinda wish
that's a good point.
I kind of wish our main cast, though, still had a little bit more interaction with Cal throughout the season to, like, build up, not that we don't care for Cal, but, like, build up their emotional stakes with them as well. Maybe it would have hit more home if that was the case.
But I feel like that was sort of canon with the storylines, right? Like, Cal was always closest to Jackson and they had their falling out. And so even though everyone knew, and then Cal sort of started to create a new relationship with Aisha, but then they kind of really went downhill with their mental health and sort of pulled away. And so I think it's sort of accurate. Like, everyone was busy with their storylines. And as we always talk about, this show has a bajillion storylines and everyone's got a butt ton of drama going on all the time. And so it feels very realistic that everyone kind of, like, that Cal slipped through the cracks, both in the episode and in everyone's minds and relationships. And so, like, and that's how this all happened. It's just no one.
That's true.
Jackson wasn't that's there true. For them and no one else really remembered.
Yeah. And then I guess it kind of dovetails with Eric's storyline, because this whole season Eric has been like questioning church and his queerness and the attitude of the church towards his queerness specifically, and this decision to be baptized and kind of be washed clean of all sin, and how he doesn't really want to kind of suppress this key part of who he is. And then I feel like we get this really good scene at the baptism where we see the guy that he hooked up with at the queer party go first and kind of really feels like it's he's renouncing his queerness. He's like, I am washed clean. I've done things I'm not proud of. Yeah. I'm going to live, you know, whatever my life after this is going to be more in line with God or whatever. And I mean, I feel really bad for that kid. Like, that, if he is truly going to like repress his queerness, that's either going to lead to problems or guilt. Like, it's not a good situation. But I also then like that that was kind of part of the impetus for Eric to be like, no, if you won't accept me for who I am, then this is not the place for me. I think it was really brave of him to stand up and ask that question of the congregation, like, whoa. But then also just heartbreaking that it was only his mum who was like willing to stand up and support him. But also, like, I kind of love that as like he now knows that his mum is willing to kind of
go against the
not ditch the community, but go against the community and be like, no, in spite of that, I'm going to support you. So he leaves, and then he meets God again on an overlook, overlook.
I was going to say, like, no matter how you felt about like Eric's visions or whatever throughout the season, which some worked and some don't, this last one really worked for me. And especially when they say, like, when they say, I've made you so bright to like guide people in the darkness, like that's one of the best lines in the show. And then how it transitions to Cal, like, I really like how that worked.
Well, yeah, it's like Eric has gotten this calling. I'm not religious at all, but like I love this for Eric. I think that I would, if I was going to go to a church, it'd be a church run by Eric F. Young, to be honest.
Yeah, seriously.
And then, you know, this first kind of task as, you know, someone who is a religious leader is to go and support Cal in their time of need. And I just really loved the way that those two things came together. And that it wasn't Jackson that found them or somebody else. Like, I think it was a nice moment between these two people who know each other but are not, like, close friends. Although it was really interesting because Jackson is like, oh, I have a brainwave. I know where they've gone. They've gone to that place that they like to hang out. And when Jackson rocks up, he's a little... not insensitive, but he doesn't really know how to handle this situation. And Eric is like, stop, calm down, be a bit quieter. Like, this is not a situation you want to blunder into, sort of thing.
Yeah, I quite like your, like, it's so, everything here works, you know, and like Eric getting sent and Eric being like the right person for the job at the time, you know? So it's like, we're all really glad that Eric got there before Jackson did. Man, like, Mitch, even when you said that line that God said to Eric, I got goosebumps again. Like, I think because that's, like, how we see Eric, right? Like, he does shine brighter than everyone else, both literally and figuratively. I was just getting so many emotions. Like, I was bawling my eyes out, honestly, when he's waiting for someone to respond and his mom is the one that stands up. And, like, leading into it, I was just like, heck no, like, there's no way Eric is getting baptized right now. Like, there is no way after all this he can say those words and repress this. Like, I just love how they always show us how strong Eric is about these things, even into a smaller sense. His conversations with Adam about, like, he'd worked too hard and come too far in loving himself for who he is to go back now. And I think this is just more of that. Like, he's just so good and at being true to himself. And I just loved all
also,
of it.
Also, Shuddy Gatwa did like a great job, like in that baptism scene especially. Like, it was just some incredible acting. Like, it was so well done.
Seriously. Yeah. I was so mad at the church this whole time. Like, even just like rejecting the funding, like rejecting the stupid funding. Like, I just couldn't even. I was like, yeah, because
the reason they gave is like, we looked at your college and their values don't align with ours. And I imagine that the Cavendish values are like, we are accepting of all people and stuff. And it's like the idea that you can see those sort of like generally progressive values and be like, no, we don't like that.
Yeah, we are not aligned with loving everyone to the point where we're going to shut down our soup kitchen rather than accept help from you, even though it doesn't, like, we wouldn't have to even think about changing our value. Like there's no, like, the values are just no, to accept like, everyone.
Burden with the money, right? Like, the money came free of any obligation. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's like, we accept everyone regardless of background and regardless of bigoted intentions to the point where we're going to give you money anyway. And they're like, nope, no thanks. Don't need it. I'm going to shut down the soup kitchen. Ugh.
The pastor does rock up at the party afterwards and is like, you know, we need to think about being more open-minded. But like, that's a long process. I kind of want Eric to start his own church in competition.
Yeah. I thought it was really good that Eric... It was really good that Eric immediately says, like, I think it's going to take more than discussions, but sure, let's start there. I thought that was a really good line.
Actions.
And I kind of liked this representation of the pastor. How, he didn't come across as a bad guy or, like, himself a bigoted person. Like, he was trying to support Eric that he could, but he was feeling, like, pressure from the church. And so I kind of liked this really gray area middle ground of how, like, the church and, like, different religious beliefs can kind of have an impact, even if, like, the pastor himself is not against it. Like, if the church is, this is what happens.
Yeah. I almost got the sense that he felt like he'd been a little, like, strong-armed into rejecting the money, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So, that storyline was kind of unexpected, but I really liked what Otis said at the end when Eric tells him, the first person who finds out, like, Otis is like, it's perfect for you, like, I can totally see it, and I do kind of, I kind of loved that moment. Which I guess is a good segue to their kind of, what's the word, reconciliation.
Which was nice.
I feel like it happened, it was nice, it happened very quickly, but maybe that's just reflective of them both kind of wanting it to happen, if that makes sense.
What bothers me, which is just like a side effect of how the timelines worked out, but I just hate that it happened after he had to, like, after he broke up with Maeve. Like, of all things, it's like a big issue has been that he keeps getting distracted by Maeve and keeps, like, not prioritizing Eric. And then we don't even get, he doesn't even get a chance to prove us all wrong because now Maeve's out of the picture and he can finally give some attention to Eric. And it's like, have you actually learned your lesson? What's going to happen when you start hooking up with Ruby, which is obviously going to happen. So.
It might not.
Yeah.
I honestly think Otis hasn't really learned much. That's my hot take. Like, I don't think he has. And every season he apologizes, but there's like no actions to really follow up his words.
And just because we've taken away just because we've taken away maybe the genesis of a lot of his bad behavior in Maeve, it's like, it's still down to him. It's not Maeve's fault that he behaved the way that he did.
Well, no, right? I understand what you're saying with Maeve, but this season, it was the buddy election thing against Ari is what drove him and Eric apart.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, it's just an ongoing thing. And I love Otis. I wish they did better with him.
He's pretty self-involved for the most part. And
Yeah, it makes me think of, like, I remember when we were discussing Maureen and Michael's separation and potential get back together is like this idea of people who break up and then get back together and whether they've truly changed and whether you're just going to have the same relationship problems again. And I remember I was talking about, like, you need to really discuss what went wrong openly and honestly for it to, like, have any chance of success. Because if you just go back together because you miss each other and don't talk about it, it's like you're just going to do the same thing again. And I'm hopeful that maybe because Eric and Otis, instead of just, like, having a fight and not talking to each other for a little while, Eric, like, really clearly laid out
That's true.
The things that Otis was doing that was wrong, like not taking an interest in Eric, and also just kind of like, I mean, not acknowledging their differences and how that changes their experience. And then in this reconciliation conversation, I think it was Otis who said, like, I love that we have our differences, but I think we're still friends despite that, you know, like, I'm hopeful that there is maybe, because of that conversation, a better chance of it going better in the future.
Yeah. Well, I think what gives them the best chance is that this is the finale episode, and so they don't have to write Otis being a dick anymore.
Yes. Yeah.
And it sucks because, like, when Otis and Eric are, like, being best friends, they're, like, some of the funnest characters to watch interact with the show. So I'm really hopeful that...
And we don't get a lot of it. Yeah.
No, we don't.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's nice that we saw enough of it that we, like... remember them that way. Like, when we think of Otis and Eric's core friendship, we at least saw it at the start so that we can hang on to that.
And also, I like that we kind of ended on that too, right? Like, one of the things they did have in common was, like, their love of Super Smash Bros, right? Like, and that was how they chose to end their night, was to spend the night together playing Super Smash Bros and, like, I guess reminding themselves of that part of their friendship, which, you know, feels good. And also, like, Otis got invited in after the reconciliation chat to, like, get done up, and he looked good, to be honest. He can rock a pussy bow.
A what?
Yeah, I don't know.
I'm fairly sure that's what it's called. God, I'm gonna get cancelled if that's not what it's called.
A pussy bow.
I'm fairly sure. Yes. Okay, good.
Not
gonna get cancelled.
Okay. Or a Lavalier.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so I feel like that is kind of, I think that's important too, to like not have this kind of walled garden with like Eric's queer friends and then Otis separate, because yes, there are different experiences, and yes, there are things that are easier in people who share an identity, but they don't need to be separate. And it's not like Otis is a bigot, right? Like, cool. What else happened? So much. I mean, maybe given we were just talking about Otis, let's finish off Maeve's storyline, maybe. Maeve, we see her back in America. I mean, she's not really in the episode that much, to be honest. Otis and Maeve have decided to go no contact, even though it really feels like both of them kind of want to be in contact, if that makes sense. Especially Otis. But
it felt a bit weird because it seemed kind of like Otis had told Maeve that he didn't want to talk for a while, and then was like getting up. It's really realistic, but he was like getting upset that she hadn't. And I was like, get your thoughts together, man. What do you want?
How dare you do exactly what I asked you to do?
I'm sorry, but why couldn't they stay together? Like, just because she was going back, they could still stay together.
But she was going to stay for longer than a couple of weeks, though, right? Like, she was like, I want to have the option to stay in America.
Well, she wanted she wanted to stay forever. Yeah. And I think Otis properly recognized, like, he said, I would feel like I'm holding you back. And I think that's, I think
long distance is really hard, by all accounts. And they haven't actually had that much time together. So I think going from a minimal amount of time together to like a potentially multi-year long distance situation, I just don't think it would work.
I think this is an example of like exceptional maturity, actually, because like as much as they love each other, there is a sort of like realism aspect of like, we're in high school, you're essentially my high school sweetheart. Like, is it sensible for us to be making like life altering decisions for each other, you know, like committing to this long distance, you moving to America? Like, am I going to eventually like move to America? Are we going to make plans for me to visit you in America? Are we going to do this whole back, like, to like, I feel like doing an international long distance relationship is a pretty significant thing. And as much as you love your high school sweetheart, sometimes it's not enough to support such a big undertaking. I think I even commented in my notes, I remember watching this and I was like, it's as Mitch predicted, you know, it was kind of a lesson about how you can be better for the journey even if you don't end up together. I think you said that like earlier on in the season in terms of first what episode. Was going to happen with Otis and Maeve. And I was like, yep, Mitch called it. This
I mean, it's the right decision. Like, based like in character and for the writers of the show, it's the right decision to do for both characters.
And like they'd had a taste of it already, so this idea of like going back and like it wasn't really like they didn't do very well at long distance.
They did not.
Although there were a whole bunch of like they didn't even admit they were in a fucking relationship while they were doing long distance. So that was a big mistake. But
stupid.
Yeah, like I think if they had like a more significant relationship, it really would have been a question of like, Otis, can you ever see yourself leaving Mordale to live in America, or are our life goals completely misaligned?
Yeah. But yeah, so when she gets back to America, we see she's kind of excited to be back. She busts in on her roommate having sex. Her roommate also is like, nah, I don't want to be a writer, actually. I'm going to go be a, what was it, like a lawyer or something? I can't remember.
Like either open a tech company or go into banking, I think she said.
That's right. Yeah. classic rich kid. And
I don't know how Maeve is friends with her, to be like, I just feel like the
proximity, I think.
So many worlds apart.
But we do get to see the nice result of her. She like used her connections that rich people have to like drop off the manuscript of whatever it was called, Maeve's book, and Maeve gets a call from the publisher being like, "We love it. Send us some more."
Southchester. I was so pleasantly surprised. Like, I think I spent the whole season, like, looking for villainous intent in both Ellen and Mr. Malloy. And I was just like, oh, like, these are just normal people and Ellen's not a heinous bitch. And
no, she's just, like, an ignorant rich kid, I think, is what Ellen's problem is. but then, yes, as you say, we have a conversation with Mr. Malloy, which is, like, the kind of the end of Maeve's storyline. And it's so good.
I loved this.
So good.
Going into it, I was like, come on, Maeve, like, let him have it. And then she just goes full class, and I'm like, ooh, that's good too.
Yeah. I kind of wish she yelled so a little bit, but
I know.
But it's like, it's almost devastating more than it is like cutting. It's like, as a teacher, your words carry a lot of power, and what you said like really hurt me. I think probably would get through a lot better than a tirade, I guess.
Oh yeah. And like her just very calmly just like fact-checking him essentially, where he's like, "I was trying to push you to be better." And it's like, "Well, you did a shit job of that, you know, like
yeah,
I was about to drop out, so maybe think twice before you try and encourage someone that way again." I also kind of, at the end, because he says something about like, oh, it's just really hard watching all you young writers at the beginning again. And I like how Maeve is kind of just like, because it's just like,
okay.
It's just like, okay, that's your problem. Be a fucking better teacher. Like, don't project your issues.
You're in a position
us.
Of authority, you need to do with that power a little better.
Yeah, like it's not my problem that you're sad about, you know, being past your heyday. Like, go talk to someone else about it.
Yeah, literally. So that's good. He got the message that he needed to hear, and he needs to take that on board for the future, I think. And Maeve's just off into a beautiful world of like cool writing stuff, and we love to see it.
Love it. I love her kind of like re-remembering that it was her dream to get out of Mordale, you know? Like, it honestly, it wasn't her dream to be with Otis. Like, she loved him, but like, that's not the dream. The dream is to get out and have a better life. And like, she's now doing it. And I love that.
Yeah. And like, it's so interesting, this Sean storyline. I wonder if it's just like, because it was like he was leaving to try and get clean was the thing we heard
allegedly.
From Dodgy Mo. Yeah. Allegedly. And it's like, it's kind of nice for me because it's like, well, I don't know where he is, so there's literally nothing I can do for him at this point. I just have to let him do his own thing and I can kind of go and live my life now, which is good for her, I guess.
I like that she's still sleeping in Otis's t-shirt. I think that's really cute. I think it's cute. Nice.
It's a good t-shirt too.
Yeah, that's great. So that's Maeve done.
That is Maeve done.
Let's the other kind of Jackson. Otis... Well, okay. Well, I was going to say the other Otis offshoot is like this whole resolution of the election.
Oh, yes. So we get the election results and Connor gets elected like the worst person in the world by like literally the like least pleasant character to interact with every single time he's on screen. And he's like, nah, I don't want to do this. You people are weird with all your sex problems. And then it's Otis got more votes than O, and everybody's like, no, we don't want you either. And then Otis is like, nah, O can do it because she's actually like good at this. And then, as I think you said, Mabel, at the start of the season, like, the easiest solution is for them to both be a fucking therapist.
This whole thing makes me so angry. I also love how we get the principal being like, okay, this was a waste of time. And it's like, yes. And then the fact that in Otis's speech, he's like, you know, I did this because I thought I was the better therapist, but no, really O's the better therapist. And I'm like, why are you guys competing still? How have we gotten to the end of the series finale and we're still saying who's the better therapist? Like,
you're just different.
Oh my God. And it's so stupid.
I think I know why he said that. Also, there's
clearly more demand. Yeah.
Yes. I think he said that because in the conversation with Abby, Roman, Aisha, and them, Otis didn't really know how to resolve the conflict in the like ecoplastics group. And O was like, well, actually, like, I know what to say. So I feel like that maybe is part of the reason that he, or at least it fed into his decision, right? He saw her efficacy over and above what he was able to provide. And that maybe is what kind of nailed it for him.
Sure. Super stupid, but sure. So stupid. Also, it makes me think of like how much of the, like, they're doing their exams, they're seniors. How many, like, are they all about to graduate? Like, what the fuck is the outcome of this? Like,
yeah,
are
what's the point of this?
Have they spent an entire year campaigning to be the school counselor, all the while sort of like, have they both been, it actually wasn't clear if they were continuing to operate or whether they both had to pause or like what was happening. But now it looks like they're maybe about to graduate. If not the end of the year, it's at least halfway through. Like the whole thing seems even more stupid.
Well, like in, when I was finishing high school, we did our main exams like 3 months before the actual end of school. So could be like that. Anyway, speaking of the ecoplastics, I did like that kind of resolution to that storyline because basically everybody except Abby gets a chance to be like, no, we don't want to be positive all the time and that can actually be damaging.
Yeah.
These are real emotions we're allowed to feel. I liked less when Aisha was like, I want to gossip because it's fun. And it's like, I don't know about that one. Gossip is toxic and... you know, engaging with it as a fun activity feels like a little bit of a bad idea.
I think it's such a gray area, even like what you call gossip and what you don't call gossip. Like anytime Aisha said anything about a person that wasn't present, it was like put money in the jar. And sometimes you're just like talking about current events in your school. I think there's a very slippery slope to like malicious intent and like talking behind people's backs. So I think it's not a clear cut area.
Sure. But I also quite liked that, and this is something I think that's come up a few times, like with Michael and stuff, that like, so they have this conversation about toxic positivity and they like kind of give Abby permission to kind of let loose because she's not been saying stuff because she's worried about like her friends rejecting her. And she just kind of unloads in this really kind of, like, it was a little mean, to be honest. Like, it wasn't, like, well, it wasn't diplomatically put, if that makes sense. It was just like, I hate it when you do this, and this is really gross, and this makes me feel disgusting, yada, 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 yada. And it's like, okay, let's talk about this, because just because you're being honest doesn't mean you need to be kind of cruel about it.
Yeah.
But I think it's also really reflective of this idea that, like, when you give people permission to engage in kind of a thing that they've been avoiding doing or been told they're not allowed to do, expecting them to be perfect at it when they first engage with that process is a bit unrealistic, right? Like, she's not going to be good at it because she hasn't learnt to communicate these things in a healthy manner.
Yeah.
And so I guess it felt realistic that she would just, like, it would just be like a torrent.
Weird vomit.
Yeah. Yeah. Like with Michael, right? Like, he was trying to be better and just not being successful straight away because that would be, again, unrealistic. And he would have these, like, knee-jerk reactions that he's used to.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Should we talk about Michael?
Yeah. Yeah, let's do that. So Michael, Adam has been avoiding Michael, and because of all the stuff going on with Cal, Michael's like actually kind of like worried, which makes sense as a parent. So he goes to Adam's work and is like, I just wanted to make sure you're okay. But then kind of uses it as an opportunity to be like, I don't just like you, I love you, which the waterworks are starting right now, even just thinking about it. And when I was watching it, I was crying like a baby. And I don't know, it was just really lovely. It was a perfect end to their arc for Michael to kind of voice those and talk about the fact that the kind of bad stuff that he did to Adam came from a place of like self-loathing, and that he's working on that. And I think it's just important for, you know, for Adam to hear that what he said last episode is not true. That it wasn't just a cynical thing.
Yeah. Last episode, Eric... Adam, like, had a go at him for, like, being a teacher, which he hates, his job. And then the first time we see him this next episode, it's like a jump cut to, like... he's like cooking in the kitchen. He's playing like this last upbeat 80s song. He's having a good time and he's doing what he loves. Like the fact that like we've got to this point with Michael, and it's like not even just him and Adam's story completing. It's like his own arc is beginning to actually enjoy doing what he does.
Like, well, yeah, after that conversation with Adam, doesn't he? He goes and he sends an email to the school being like, I'd about like catering to cater the fundraiser, which it's like he's like, doing it, he's taken the step.
I love that Adam is the one that like inspired him. Like, yeah, it's such a good result. Like, Adam has spent his whole life feeling like a stupid failure and thinking that his dad thinks he's the worst, and I feel like a lot of their relationship has been his dad also thinking that Adam's a failure and worrying about his future and like, oh, you need something stable, I need you to have a good job, and like, I'm the headmaster and blah blah blah. And like, just the role reversal of Adam like figuring his own shit out well ahead of Michael figuring out his shit, and like actually, you know, quitting school because it didn't work for him, finding this job that really does work for him, that's outdoors and with animals and doing something that he likes, and he's the one that's actually pointing out that Michael is off track. And he's the one that inspires Michael to be like, maybe I want to open a catering business that does cool queer events and makes rainbow pizzas.
Yeah. Yeah. And then they have a hug because Michael is like, I'd quite like to hug you right now, which is so delightfully awkward. But then they hug and it's beautiful. And then people start arriving for the class, which is funny. And then Michael gets on a horse. He's like, no, I won't get on a horse. God, no, that's not gonna happen.
And I love when Adam's in like teaching mode, he's calling his dad Michael. He's like, come on, Michael, we're trotting now. So good.
And then there's a nice little scene afterwards where Adam goes to Jem and is like, I wasn't completely honest with you last time when we were talking. Like, my previous partner's name is Eric, he's a guy, I'm bisexual effectively. I wish he'd said I'm bisexual, but you know, that's a small note. And Jem is clearly a cool person and is like, that's great, do you want to go on a date? Which I kind of love. Dating your boss is a little weird, but also they've had chemistry the whole time, so like, whatever.
She's so pretty.
She's so pretty. And she's cool with bisexuality, which is a big tick in my book.
Yeah. I love him being so, like, you know, like, you thinking back to Adam having that conversation with Eric where he had to, like, look away. Like, they had to sit back to back because he couldn't collect his thoughts enough to say it out loud.
So true.
And here he is so clearly being like, I like men and women. It's not a phase. It's who I am. I didn't like that about, but I'm trying, like my, I didn't like that about myself, but I'm trying to. Like, he's just so self-aware and able to articulate how he feels to another person, which is massive growth for him.
That is such a good point. I had completely forgotten about that. And that, yeah, it is complete reversal. Like, from like episode one, like just the dumb bully who has no kind of awareness of anything, to this like fully actualized bisexual teacher who like has a good relationship with his dad and his family is back together. Oh my god, amazing.
So good. The only note, so like we kind of get Adam and Michael arriving back home, Maureen's watching TV, and Adam invites his dad to watch TV with them, and they sit as a little family. This is totally just a me problem, but I just think Michael holding Maureen's hand is just a step too far.
Too fast, buddy. Slow down.
Yeah.
Like, yesterday we had a conversation where Adam thought you were just being nice to him to get back with his mum, and here you are. Like, I just think, just don't hold the hand right away. It's
next
too much.
Time. Just next time. Just wait.
Yeah, just wait one more day.
Yeah. So true. Cool. What else is on the list? Let's talk about Jackson, maybe. So Jackson goes and meets his dad, and it's a short scene because it doesn't go well. Basically, it's don't come and see me ever again is the vibe. Because we find out, basically the story is that Roz hooked up with this guy who was married, and then kind of got pregnant, and Coach Mum was like, let's raise him together, which is really lovely, and that the dad just didn't want anything to do with him, which sucks, but also really kind of a thing that happens all the time, unfortunately, and we see that. So the dad, once he realizes who he is like, get off my property, which is pretty fucking harsh way of doing it. But I really like the scene with the mums and Jackson afterwards, where it's like, why doesn't he love me? Is the question, right? And I think this is a pretty common question that kids ask themselves with all the deadbeat dads out there. And I like that the mums are just like, because he's a fucking idiot, Jackson. Like, if he had the chance to know you and he chose not to, then that is his loss, absolutely, and he's a piece of shit.
Yeah.
And I like that the relationship with his mums is not fixed. There's still some anger there, I think, about the way that it was handled, but it's like they're talking about it, and it's like it's on a journey to kind of healing, which is nice to see. It's like these sorts of things don't go away overnight. With a couple of nice words. It takes time, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, no.
Cool. Good summary. I guess. Oh, yeah, Mabel?
Well, no, I'm just like, Joe and Jean, they had a lovely moment on the radio where Jean gets to therapize her own sister. And I think that was quite incredible. And like, I feel like we've really criticized the character Joe this season, you know, and like what an unnecessary addition she was and how she...
That's mainly me. But...
an unnecessary addition. But like, you know, I think we all found her very annoying and kind of like an extreme caricature almost of an annoying sister. And it wasn't until the last episode that we really got a bit more insight and background into why she is the way she is. But despite all that, like, I mean, the fact that I was so kind of like emotionally involved in her story since the last episode to the point where I like really feel this growth from her and like reaching out for help and like reflecting on herself a little bit more. The fact that it was like kind of compressed into two episodes almost is kind of crazy.
Well done.
Yeah.
Not yet. I was Joe's biggest hater, I'll be honest. I really liked to the point where her and Jean got to in the end. I just wish there wasn't so much crap at the start. That's all I have to add. The last episodes, as you said, Mabel, were perfect amounts of Joe and Jean.
Mm.
Yeah.
was good. I was a little surprised, but I guess it's fun. Like, I mean, Dan, well, we get a bit of Dan sitting down to find out that he's the father of Joy, but we don't actually see it.
Yeah.
And so obviously Joe should not get with Dan. But I was kind of surprised that she was already over him.
I don't know. I don't think that's a barrier.
Well, yeah, well, kind of. I kind of really shipped Dan and Joe, like, from their opening scenes of them, like, talking Lord of the Rings to each other and just, like, seemingly, they seem, like, on the same energy, like, they, like, run on the same energy, so yeah. I thought they really worked. So I was sort of surprised.
I don't think she got over him, sorry to interrupt. I don't think she got, she was just saying that to, like,
you reckon?
Give her an excuse to leave town.
I guess that's what, maybe that's what Jean was kind of highlighting. She's like, you're just trying to blow things up so you can leave. Maybe the thing that we don't see now that the series is over is that Jean will be, like, supportive of their relationship. You know, like, maybe she'll help
I kind of want it to be a little Modern Family thing where, like, yes, it's Jean and Dan's kid, but, like, Joe kind of is with Dan and helps raise Joy, and it's like a little, like,
so she's cute, like an aunt mum.
Yeah, like, but without it being weird.
That'd be confusing growing up as that poor kid. Well
yeah, you'd have to make a decision about, like, who is this kid's mum.
Who's the mum?
Who is just the kid's, like, extra parent. But, like, I think you could make it work. It's the 21st century, like, I think
it would be very confusing. It would be so confusing because Jean's obviously going to want to remain Joy's mum. Like, Jean's going to be number one mum. Dan's going to inevitably be the dad if he chooses to stick around and raise Joy. And then if Joe's the partner,
Joe's, like, just like a stepmum, you know?
Stepmum aunt. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's going to be weird. Like, if she's living with Dan and Joy's, like, doing part custody with Dan and Joe, but Joe's the aunt, stepmum. It'd get so weird.
I mean, Otis is going to uni soon, presumably, so maybe they'll all live in that giant house together.
It'll be like Full House, but smaller.
Yeah. But yes, it was a good resolution. I kind of liked the balance between, like, Jean's, like, professional kind of having to sound like she's just therapizing some stranger on the radio, mixed with these clear, like, messages directly to her sister. Like, I don't know why, but I really just liked that kind of mixture of things. It allowed her to use her professional knowledge while also being a sister, if that makes sense. It's just kind of beautiful.
Yeah.
And I think it let, like, I don't think they could have had this conversation in another way. Like, they were both clearly talking to each other, knowing that they're sisters and they're talking to each other. But it was through this structure of, like, anonymous caller getting therapy from a professional. And that was the way they could have the, they couldn't actually just have it as Jean and Joe. They had to have it as, like, therapist and Joanna the caller.
I definitely, like, went better this way than I think it would have if they'd tried to have a conversation face-to-face.
They would have just had mud wrestling again, God's sake.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I'm, like, you know, I'm positive and hopeful for the future of the Joy, Jean, and Dan triangle.
Yeah.
Maybe we should talk about Viv and, to a lesser extent, Bo. Because, like, Viv is out there with everybody, like, helping look for Cal, but in one of the, like, downtimes while they're waiting for something to happen, Bo is, like, sending, like, lots and lots and lots of messages. And it's just good because she's there with her friends who can just help her kind of stay strong in the face of his, like, attempts to kind of get back with her, I guess, is what he's trying to do, or, like, repair the relationship in some way. Make excuses for his behavior is definitely part of it, and I kind of
she hadn't officially cut off with him until she cut it off at the mall. It wasn't last episode. I hadn't talked since that last episode, and then there was the other scene at the party at the end. I'm pretty sure that happened. Made it official, but
I mean, I guess the mall, the one in the mall is the breakup, and then the one at the party is the, like, no, you need to listen to the words that are coming out of my mouth, this is over, don't talk to me. Like, he's trying to, like, keep pushing in the way that abusers like him do, is like, oh no, I'm gonna love bomb you until you let me back in, and then I'm gonna do the exact same thing again because I haven't learned. I did like that Viv was like, you need to work on these parts of yourself. Yeah. Like, it's not just like, you can't be with me anymore. It's like, you need to fix this because it's a problem. I don't know if he will have heard her.
Yeah.
But
also, and also it's like, it's good that she didn't, she made, it was clear that they were just like problems that he had. And it wasn't like, fix this and then we'll, you know, and then we'll get back to our relationship and revisit it. It's like, we're done, full stop, end of story. You've got problems.
Yeah. And I like that there's the one at the mall when he's like sending all the messages. It's kind of like the friends who are like, no.
Yeah.
Don't reply to him, like, be strong. But then at the party at the end, it's like all her. Like, they're behind her and, like, you know, physically supporting her, I guess, like being a backup. But, like, they don't tell her what to say or anything like that. It's just all her. And she's, like, taking control and, like, doing it for herself, I guess, which is nice.
Yeah, I actually had like a moment at the mall where I don't know, I think I'm just like really into Isaac at the moment. Like, he's just such a good character these days, because he was looking like especially concerned and troubled by Bo. So I was watching it being like, ooh, I wonder what, like, maybe Isaac's going to do something, but that didn't happen.
So yeah, I think that like ended as well as it could have, and hopefully Viv won't fall into the trap and go back to him at any point.
It really shows like the importance of having a support network to like help you stay strong and back you both physically and emotionally, like, because otherwise, like, what, I don't know, completely different story otherwise.
Speaking of Isaac and Amy, because at the start they're like putting prices on all their artwork and Isaac is like, I'd like to kiss you. And then Amy kind of like bails and kisses him on the cheek, which is a little awkward, let's be honest. But they're like being cute all episode. And then Amy, I can't remember what it is that triggers Amy's kind of like realization that she wants to go and do this thing. But she's like, I know what I want to do. She goes and gets the jeans and she goes to the bus stop that she got on. And she, like, takes a bunch of cool photos. She, like, dances. She, like, burns the jeans. She's, like, it's, like, she's actualizing. She's healing. She's, like, she's processing the trauma, I guess.
She's the coolest person in the whole world. Like, this, everything about this, I can't get enough. The photos are amazing. Her emotional processing of this is amazing. Like,
yeah.
She's the best.
And then once she's kind of processed this, then she like takes Isaac into the dark room, which is already a very romantic space, and is like, all right, let's do this.
Love it. I so love good. How like she's kind of, I mean, I love so many things about both these characters. Like, I think they really did Amy justice in not just writing her off as like the dumb comedic side character, like making her like a Joey, you know, like the just and making her possibly like even more narrowly stupid in character. Instead they like expanded it, made her like a whole person that's so like the way her brain works. I just love that she can kind of do this, like want to kiss Isaac, realize that she's still got some stuff she's dealing with, go out and deliberately deal with it and then come back ready. Like it's such an Amy way of dealing with things. Like she's not really, like, sometimes it may take a push to get her to, like, reflect and realize what's going on, but she's not the kind of person that, like, sits in self-denial or avoids things. She just, like, needs a little help to notice things sometimes. And then the same with Isaac. Isaac, even reflecting on the fact that I was expecting to be a hero in the Bo situation and how much I'm, like, loving him with Amy, I just love... Because when he deletes the voicemail back at the end of, like, season one or whatever, I'm just like, this guy's the worst. And it's like he's the villain and we hate Isaac. And I think I'm really glad that he didn't stay that way and that they've turned him into such a lovable character. And I'm just really, really glad because I love him.
Yeah, I think they're good representations of stuff we've been saying since the first season about how this show is, like, so good at giving side characters a whole bunch of depth. Like, even though it's like eight episodes a season, like, they still find the time to kind of really expand out and give them actual, they're real people, you know, they feel like real people. They're not just like the dumb rich girl or the guy in the wheelchair who's jealous. Like, it's, yeah.
I think the best quality of Isaac, which we've learned to appreciate over time, is that he lets people do their own feeling and, like, stand up for themselves instead of, like him actually doing it. Because he could, and he's very confident in himself. But instead of, like, actually going up and rolling over Bo's foot or whatever, he lets Viv take those steps by herself. And similarly with Amy, he lets her find her own voice in her art. Because it's very easy just to be like, oh, here, do this, like, let me talk to you, blah, blah,
blah. Yeah.
And same with Maeve, he helps her develop and grow herself without pushing too much. Pushes people in the right direction, but he doesn't get in the way. And I think that is an amazing quality.
I think that's such a great point to make about Isaac. And I think it's so, like, reflective of how he wants to be treated. Like, he very much is treating others how he wants to be treated because, you know, he hates people thinking that they know what's best for him or, like, what his challenges are or what his experience has been. Like, he would hate for someone to assume that about him. And so I love that, he really has never done that for anyone else. And I hadn't really thought about that. So, good call.
Yeah. So good. The only person I'm kind of got left on my list is Ruby, although I'm happy to be corrected on that. We get a nice moment from Ruby where she reflects on the fact that being around all of these, like, positive, progressive people has, like, maybe made her slightly nicer of a person, which is good. That's some growth. And I like that it's, like, acknowledged growth, because I feel like we've all kind of seen that in the last season and, well, maybe even the last two seasons, her being, like, less of a mean girl. But the fact that she knows that about herself, I think, is really kind of important. And, like, it means she's thought about it, right? It's not just, like, accidentally happened. She's like, oh, maybe I should be nicer to people. And we get an interaction between her and Otis where Otis is like, maybe we could be friends. And she's like, maybe not. Maybe we can just go our separate ways, which I'm like... I totally love that for Ruby, being, like, protecting herself. But also I did love Ruby and Otis, and Maeve's gone now, so, like, there's nothing to stop it happening.
But, yeah, I mean, I think what we've said a lot of the time, though, because, honestly, Otis is trash. I'm sorry, but he's, like, again, now that he's no longer existing in a TV show and only exists in, like, the ether of this story in the universe, like, he can become a better person. But I feel like the main vibe of the season has been, like, both Maeve and Ruby are too good for him, and I'm really happy for him to end up with neither, to be honest.
Yeah, that's totally fair.
We'll just have to watch him in his random Christmas special rom-coms that he's in now. He was in a Christmas special movie last year, and then in 2022, and then they made a sequel of it in 2023. So he's
as in Otis the character.
Asa Butterfield.
The actor can do whatever he wants.
The character. No, forever Otis. I mean, I guess he got Eric, right? Like, that was... He has, like, repaired his relationship with Eric, and that is kind of the one that he gets. He maybe doesn't deserve to get all of them back in one hit because he did some pretty awful shit this season, as he does every season.
Yeah. And they really... Like, they couldn't write anything that pushes him too far towards Ruby without, like, diminishing his relationship with Maeve, you know? Like, it would have been... It would have fucked up everything if he'd... all of a sudden be like, oh, actually, like, turns out I have feelings for you, and, like,
that's true.
It would just water down the profoundness of their relationship.
There's definitely a part in the back of Otis's brain where he's thinking, like, oh, Ruby, Maeve's gone. He's, like, trying to get back.
Yep.
And look, maybe, you know, once he's kind of dealt with the fact that him and Maeve are not talking to each other anymore and, like, had some time on his own, and he's still in Moordale and Ruby's still in Moordale, maybe they'll bump into each other at the mall or whatever, and, like, maybe they can slowly build back up again. That I could see that happening. Or they go off to uni and they never see each other again except for, like, the 20-year reunion, and then they have sex in the car.
Although speaking of Otis and Ruby bumping into each other at the mall, I loved the scene where they were trying to get like the security camera footage, and the girl like recognizes Ruby, and Otis like he's just kind of like, she's kind of a big deal, you know, like.
Well, because it's like this whole season, Ruby's been trying to convince, especially like the Ecoplastics, that she's kind of a big deal, right? Like she like sat down with them and is like, yeah, no, I'm popular. And they're like, not here, you're not. And it's like, I guess part of that journey. So yeah, that's all the stuff that happened this episode. I kind of want to now have our kind of like summary of the season and the show as a whole. I think it probably mixed them all together. I feel like for the season, I think it was fine. I would put it above season 3, but below season 1 and 2, I think would be...
I agree.
I think I differ a little bit. I think I rank 3. It's a bit of a cop-out, but 3 and 4 are pretty equal. Right. I think I find a little bit more enjoyment in 3 than you guys did. But really, yeah, 1 and like 2 are...
And Hope stands out, but I think you might be right. Like, I think when I think season 3, I think Hope, but there was more in that season than her. And so it's probably not as bad as I remember.
It is when I think everyone agrees storyline started season 3. So.
Yes. Yeah.
And look, looking back, I actually like Michael as a villain to start as well. He was a pretty fun villain compared to the other villains we've had.
Yeah.
We got the great, like, we got the cathartic final kiss between Maeve and Otis in season 3. You know, at the bus stop when they get left behind. Like, that was great.
That's true. Mm-hmm. Yeah, all right, maybe.
And I miss Jakob. I miss Ola. I miss Ola.
I did. Lily. I mean, yeah, I did miss a lot of that. Even Jakob. I don't know. Season 4 felt very abrupt where we, like, lost a bunch and gained a bunch, and, like, I didn't really have much time to process it.
I miss Lily, is who I miss.
Yeah.
She was delightfully weird.
Especially how we like ended with Lily. I was kind of sad that we didn't get to see what happened to her.
And I missed the Hendricks and Miss Sands, which we got a little bit
at the funeral. That was nice.
But they
I mean, that's the other thing is I feel like there were some really beautiful moments this season. Like the funeral, like Jean and Maeve's conversation, like Michael and Adam's conversation. And maybe this season was more cathartic, if maybe not as good of a season, if that makes sense.
I'd agree with that. When I think of the series as a whole, and maybe what I expected from it at the start versus what I ended up getting, and even maybe what sort of like inspired us setting up this podcast in general, like I think there was a lot of, at least I had a lot of expectation that this was, you know, a show that had great representation of like sex and sexual topics in young people, and that maybe I think I had this expectation that it would be such a popular and like mass appealing show that it would maybe like change people's minds about certain things. I think I've gotten to the end of it. And I don't think that's what the show does. I think the show is appealing to people who already agree with what's represented in the show.
Definitely.
But I think I've reflected on, I don't think that's a bad thing. Like I kind of really like that we have a show that shows how things should be and how they hopefully are and how we want them to be and how we want people to react to things. And like, maybe we can have some other show that is more like gently educating the bigots and haters. Like, this show doesn't have to be that.
that was clearly season 4, right? I think they realized that and they're like, let's just go in. And you, like, there's been lots of discourse online that people didn't like this season as much. And I think it's got to do with a part of that. Like, a lot of those people didn't like that we are fully into that. That slowly still. I think that's why lots of people would like this one less.
Yeah, but I think for those of us that I'm just going to say are on the right side of that opinion, I love that we have the show for this, that you can go and it's kind of like a place of comfort. And I think what I didn't maybe expect as much is that it's not just like sex and sexual topics and young people that this show is so good at representing, and like even just like diverse representation of sexual and gender identity. What really struck me, particularly in the last couple of episodes of this season, that made me reflect on how it's happened across all seasons in the series is the different relationships between children and their parents. I think I was kind of noticing like the things that touched me and made me cry, like the things that touched and made other people cry, and just looking at, you know, like Maeve's relationship with a lack of parents and Otis's relationship with his single mother and his dad and Adam's relationship with his parents and Eric's relationship with his parents and different cultures and religion and
Jackson.
Yep. And like, it wasn't just there. We actually like really, I think there are so many different, I think relationships with parents are really significant and complicated and varied. And I think this show actually did an amazing job that I wasn't expecting from it of giving us all a bit of something that maybe touches on our own relationships with our parents and helps us process them.
When we first watched the show, the show is called Sex Education and you think it's going to be about sex, et cetera. And then you kind of think of like relationships, you're thinking about like loving, like partners.
Romantic,
right? Romantic, where I actually think the relationship that this show focuses on, that's kind of like its weakest side a lot of the time. Where I feel like parents, and then also I think friendships is like something that this show really does well. And actually, that's my biggest takeaway from this series, is like the importance of friends and how like the diversity of friendships and like the different ways they can form. Yeah, that's
and that they take
similar
work,
to what Mabel was
know?
Saying. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They take just as much work as actual relationship, like, well, partners in relationships.
Well,
like
they're
just as important.
Yeah, and I think that's something that we take for granted all the time, right? Especially like from school. I think school friendships especially where like maybe
it's
you've known
proximity.
Them since you were maybe like you've been in the same class for X years and you've known each other since you were like 5 years old or 10 years old or whatever, and they've just always been there, and so you don't feel like it's something you have to work at. And then I think a lot of the time, you know, you graduate high school and you realize how hard it is to maintain friendships with these people that you've been with your whole life. I think platonic friendships get taken for granted a lot of the time is easy when they're just a different kind of relationship to maintain.
Yeah. Just on your point about the parental relationship stuff, it's quite interesting because when you were saying like that this show kind of is like preaching to the choir, which I do generally agree with, I think that the kind of tone is not necessarily like really educational for people who don't agree. Like I think it's educational for people who kind of agree and don't really know much about it, but people who are like oppositional to it, I think it wouldn't necessarily convince them of anything. But I do also think that maybe there is a little window there in that I feel like maybe this is the sort of show that people would end up watching with their parents. And I think maybe it would, for those parents who are on the more conservative or like non-progressive side, maybe it would start some conversations. Or I think the way it deals with some of the stuff is quite non-judgmental in a good way, and maybe it would make them feel less defensive about learning more in the future or something like that. Yeah, I do think it's maybe mostly preaching to the choir, but I have a hope that it is non-confrontational enough that it won't immediately put people off, especially if the first season is quite silly, if that makes sense, in a good way. It's like it's not big stakes. It's like you know, Adam can't keep an erection and stuff like that. It's like funny and silly.
It's
and
not
it's
like pushing anyone away.
Yeah. And I'm like, I have a hope that because of that introduction, people like the characters and they're like maybe watching it as a family and then they keep watching it.
Yeah, because
like,
the last couple of seasons is where those last couple of seasons that Mabel was talking about, there's parental stuff, is where that really picks up, is those last two seasons. As you said, hopefully it
and I wonder if
that general audience to start.
And I wonder if the empathy with which the show treats Michael's storyline in particular will also help parents stay on, because like I think it would be very easy to just kind of hate Michael and not give him the redemption that he got. But because they did that and because they acknowledged that, you know, like, yes, Adam is the child, but like we do need to cut Michael some slack because he is just a person at the end of the day who is trying. But in terms of my kind of overall takeaway, I think it's related to both of yours, like what you both said. The thing that kind of I think the show kept coming back to, and I think all of the characters at certain points kind of touched on this, is apologies and the kind of what the difference is between a good and a bad apology, a real apology and kind of a fake apology, an apology that's for you, an apology for the person that you've hurt. We've seen it in Michael's journey especially, and he's had to do it multiple times. I mean, Otis every season has to apologize for a bunch of his heinous behavior. And I feel like, you know, he does a kind of a fake apology in like the third last or the second last episode, and then he does a real apology in the last episode of every season, even though it doesn't really seem to change much, which I guess is another thing that the show maybe is commenting on, is that even if you give a genuine heartfelt apology, it kind of only works if that then leads to change, so that you're not recreating those situations that led to you needing to apologize in the first place. And I kind of like that. It was really kind of modeling both good and bad examples on over and over and over again. And it relates to that idea that relationships take work and they don't just kind of happen accidentally or because you hang out every now and again.
Yeah. Yeah, I think being able to, like, just having this conversation with you guys now and, like, step back and reflect on the series as a whole again, because I think we've been going through it season by season and episode by episode, and I think it's been a lot easier to be, like, more critical of little things and compare seasons to each other. But, I mean, this has been nice to kind of just remember, I love this show still. Like, I think this show is great, and it's done so many good things and had so many lovable characters and so many lovable arcs, and it's still like beautiful, like the aesthetic of this show, which I think I used to gush over a lot more in the first couple of seasons, but it still holds true in season four, like the costume design and like the sets and everything. Like I think every episode I was writing out like, where is everyone getting their clothes? These are the most amazing clothes. And, like, this is 100% a show that I would continue to, like, recommend to people to watch if they haven't. Like, it's really good. Like,
especially teenagers. I think if I'd had the show like this as a teenager, I feel like there would have been so many things that I would have been less stressed about and would have been better about. You know, I'm not claiming I would have had the deep level of analysis that we've gone through and as adults, but I still just think it models so much good things. And I, like, it's why Gen Z is going to be okay. Like, not just this show, but I think it is reflective of the environment that Gen Z has grown up in. That just means that things are going to be a bit better for the, I think, I hope.
Well, yeah, when I think of shows and, like, representations, both in like, Australian TV shows and American TV shows, of, like, what high school representation looked like, it was very stereotypical and like, not really relatable. Maybe this is more a product of, like, a lot of the shows I watched were American, and maybe it is more relatable if you are an American. But even in Australian shows, like, for one thing, the teenagers looked like adults. And they were all just, even like the bullied kids were like beautiful. And everyone was just like really mean or really perfect and nothing really in between. Whereas Sex Education has so much cringe, like so much cringe and so much like people embarrassing themselves and being so uncomfortable and screwing up so much, which I just feel like is what you need to watch when you're in school, because you're constantly feeling like the most awkward person in the whole world.
Yeah. And I definitely back on Matt's idea. This is a perfect show for teenagers. And like, as an adult, we were saying that it's a perfect show to show your parents, but like the opposite way as well. It's like the perfect introduction to show your teenage kids, like preteens, introduce them to this, like, pretty daunting side of life, like puberty and sex and love and blah, blah, blah. But this is, like, a pretty, like, safe, well, not safe, but, like, it's a pretty good way to, like, introduce that it's okay to feel silly about this, because the show itself is silly. And, like, it's fun. Life is meant to be fun. Sex is meant to be fun. But and it also messy. Has, like, those deep, like, serious moments.
Yeah.
Yeah, and messy. Like, love, like, sex is meant to be messy. And, like, it also has those serious moments that will, like, capture those kids as well. I think this is a really good show.
And honestly, even though I did sort of say that maybe this show hasn't ended up being, like, the main point of the show hasn't actually been sex education, like, I think it's done a lot of things better than it's done that, but there is a lot of education, like, scattered in between episodes. Like, there's so many little things that if you're a young person who maybe isn't getting that information elsewhere, like, you're going to pick up the odd fact here and there by watching this show.
And we've also talked about, like, media providing scripts for how things should go. Like, we talked about that, especially with, like, movies. We've talked about that a lot. And I think that this show does provide a whole bunch of new scripts. And also a bunch of scripts involving people who have not really been represented in the past.
That's true.
I mean, not commonly anyway. Like, it's just, the diversity of the show, I think, is one of its strengths as well.
Well, and the fact that the show does so well is that, like, expressing that the diversity is common.
Yeah.
Like, it's not, doesn't, like in a movie or show, like, they would make a big deal about this, like, diverse character. Like, their story arc would be big because they are the diverse character.
Yeah, that's, like, overcoming their diverse, adversity or whatever.
Well, like, this show does it a little bit, but, like, for the most part, they're just a normal, everyday person.
They're just people. Yeah.
Which I think was partly, like, facilitated by the mass amount of storylines that were constantly going on, which I think we've had mixed thoughts about, like, whether it's a good or bad thing to have so much going on all the time. But it's because they treat, like, the auxiliary characters as, like, almost main characters with their own storylines, and I think that's done so much to show, like, the diversity of characters. Like, no character is really worth more than the other. Like, obviously we have, like, Otis and Maeve and Eric as, like, core characters, but, like, we're just as invested in all the other characters and their shit's just as important. Which is impressive for a show to do, really.
It's very impressive.
Ooh, it's all over now, guys.
It is all over. It's a bit sad, but I think it's really nice when a show has a chance to end on its own terms. It didn't, like, it would have been worse if it had just gotten
cancelled. Yeah.
Yeah. I do really appreciate it. I would have loved, like, the thing where they're like, all right, we'll do a movie at the end. That would have been great, but, you know, it's fine. This is good enough.
I think for a movie, there's way too much going on.
That's true, actually. It would be very busy. Yeah.
Yeah, because you'd have to choose, like, one storyline for a movie, and that would feel so different.
It would be Otis.
And
we'd be like, ugh.
No, we want Eric's spin-off show where he's starting his church. That's what we want.
True.
I mean, I can't claim that. That was Mitch's idea.
Mabel's full house at the Milburn house could be fun as well.
That's true. And then you could have the other, like you could have Otis and Maeve and Ruby, like, just appearing occasionally, you know, for an episode or two. Yeah. Otis comes back from uni and visits Eric at his church.
Okay, I like that.
Yeah. Cool. I wanted to, like, wrap it up with some, like, quick questions. Favorite season?
Mm-hmm.
Go.
I think season 2.
Okay.
I'll go season 2.
Because, like, I feel like I'm going, like, my first thought was also season 2. But I think it's because it's definitely not seasons 3 or 4.
Yeah.
And for some, I feel like they're maybe blending together, but I'm just assuming season 2 was maybe stronger than season 1. But actually, what are the things that happen in season 2 and 1?
It's a good question. I don't quite recall.
The Alien musical. I love the Alien musical.
Oh. Yeah. Wait, which one ends on the big sex musical? 2. But 2 ends on that because then we get hope in season 3. I do think probably season 2 as well because of, like, I liked Ola and I liked Adam's arc there. In season 1 we have a lot more of, like, even, like, the plastics. Like, I think everyone was still a bit in their pigeonhole a bit. So, yeah, I'm also going to double down on season 2.
I am going to pick season 1 partially because I think when it came out it was such an exciting show. It was like, oh my god, I love this show. I love all of the things that it's trying to do. I like how different it is, and I just, like, I'm gonna give it my favorite purely because it started the show, you know.
I think that's a good call.
I'm not gonna do least favorites. We're just gonna keep it positive for this final episode on sex education. But favorite character for the whole series. Yeah, it's a tricky one. I mean, I already know who mine is, but that's fine.
Got a couple.
Yeah.
Look, I think mine's probably a little bit colored by recency bias because Amy has had an incredible season, but I am going to pick Amy. Nice. I think even her story ending with her like lighting her jeans on fire, like that started all the way at the beginning, and we've seen her, like, we've seen so much growth from Amy, and she's been delightful the entire time. Like, there's no way she's not my favorite. She's 100% my favorite.
I like that it didn't also resolve her storyline really quickly, and it gave it time to breathe, because I feel like there is a tendency in TV shows for things to get solved very quickly, and sometimes it's not solved really quickly. Sometimes it takes 3 seasons of your life before you kind of learn to deal with something, and sometimes you never do. But like, yeah, I do appreciate that.
We started with Amy dating Adam. Like, just think about that.
Oh my god,
so different.
She had an emotional support goat at some point. She went to therapy with Jean at some point. Like,
yeah.
She was dating, I don't even remember Lollipop's name anymore.
Oh, yeah.
Ray of Sunshine.
Loved him. The math lover.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Oh, no. That was
Steve.
Two. I was thinking, there's a guy.
Steve.
Steve. Steve was awesome.
Yeah. I love Steve. Another guy as well. And I liked that as well. Like, just because he was a nice guy doesn't mean that she had to stay with him. Like, everything was done so well. I'll stop talking about Amy now, though.
Yeah.
I am stuck between the Groffs.
Ooh.
I think it's just similar with Amy. Like, the side characters, I think they're the best characters of this show. Because we start with them, we get like little doses of them, and we're like, I love this, give me more. And then when we do get more, we actually get this growth because we got so little of them to start with, so we can see them grow as a person. So that's why I think these side characters are my personal right choice. I'm going to throw a curveball. I'm going to say Michael Groff.
Nice.
I thought you might. I like that choice.
I am going to pick
I think
Adam.
Just similarly, I always say, you're going to go with Adam?
Yeah.
That's good that we covered both Groffs.
Yeah.
Yeah. Glad we did.
But yeah, I think Michael, even just what Matt was saying before about giving maybe some parents someone to hold on to, was like someone who started as the bad guy but didn't end as the bad guy. I think that's a really nice role that Michael got to play.
That's what I mean. Even just like as an entertainment factor, I said this earlier, I think he was the most entertaining villain we had in this show.
Definitely. I will agree with that. Every other villain we've had since has been annoying or
like
non-existent.
He was evil, but then he was also like a dumb goof at points as well.
Even when we hated him, he had all these funny scenes of like sneaking chocolate in his office and stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly. And then, just his whole redemption arc. And that's my choice.
That's a good one.
I agree. I mean, I also really, I would say he's my like third favorite. I think part of the reason I chose Adam is that I feel like Michael is like the bad guy for the first two seasons almost entirely, except for those little funny bits. And then he has his redemption. Whereas I feel like Adam definitely starts out as like a bit of a bully and a villain, and the way he treats Eric is obviously really bad. But I feel like even in the first season, we start to kind of break through that shell a bit. And I just love his story. I mean, also he's a bisexual character, and that is points for me. And I like all of the different phases he went through. I like that him and Eric hooked up in detention, and then they tried to make it work and it didn't work, because Adam needed to accept himself, and then he got through that too, and him and Eric are in a good place now. And then we get all this stuff in the last season with Jem and the horse thing and like getting out of school and just like, also then, as you said earlier today, Mabel, him kind of almost parenting Michael through Michael's journey. Like, it's this full self-actualization and like confidence boost, and the going from back to back to face to face, and it's all good. Second is Eric.
It's really hard to like, so I was just going to say with the Groffs, I think it's really hard to like separate them, because such of their like, I said this in season 3, I think a lot of their arcs that were going through was like very mirrored of one
related
another.
To each like, other even like yes. when Adam went to military school or whatever, like that was because of his relationship with Michael, and so it was kind of both, like we were sort of hating Michael for doing it and like feeling for Adam for going through it.
So I think I know it's cheating, but I'm actually gonna pair them together.
Well, Matt's cheating as well by having a second choice, so like whatever.
I like Eric. I think the reason he's not my favorite is that, like, he obviously has some, there's some hard times, like when he gets assaulted in the first season and all that sort of stuff. But I think for the most part, he is more of a supporting character in that he helps other
people. He's pretty stable.
Yeah, he's pretty stable. And I think that the growth he goes through is like, I think there's not that much change. Like, there's a bit of like realizing what he wants to do with his life and finding his calling. But the difference between season one and season four is nowhere near as big as the Groffs, right? Like,
no.
Which I think is really nice for him, his choice in becoming a pastor, right? Is that like he's always had a pretty true arrow and like direction of like who he is and like where he's going. And I feel like that's a strong trait to have.
Yeah.
Can we just remember Adam's poem that Raheem helped him write? How good was his poem?
So good.
I mean, I love Mr. Hendrix as well. He's up there, but he's not around long enough to really
say. Although him singing at the funeral, that was excellent.
Yeah. Cool. I think that might be it. What a good show.
Yeah.
You know, if you've been listening this whole time, like, thank you for listening with us. It's been so fun to get to talk about it in this more like structured way. Like, I think especially with the way that shows are released now, where it's all in one go and people watch it whenever they get up to it, I feel like it's, you don't get these sort of deeper conversations about shows as much anymore, especially not, you know, multiple years worth of conversations about one show.
It almost helps you like it more, because like you said, you watch it and you kind of binge it, and then you enjoy it while you're watching it, but then you're already onto like the next season, or you go through.
You forget about it.
Yeah, and you don't really have the time to sit with what made you like it. Like, you like it, but you don't even think about why that much, and it's nice to be able to talk it out.
It's good just to have, like, this. We don't really have this much anymore because of the binge factor, but, like, being able to just discuss with people and get different opinions and maybe that changes your perspective and the enjoyment of the show.
Definitely.
Like, changes as well. Like, we really,
and also the fun of, like, what's going to happen, you know? Like, even within a season, like, we often just wasn't sure exactly where it was going to go, and I think that's just fun. Bring back a weekly release schedule.
Well, a lot of shows have been doing that.
It is coming back a little bit, yeah.
I think people struggle with it, though. I mean, I've been commenting on this. There's so much content constant. Like, when we were doing weekly releases, it was often just on, like, free-to-air TV or live TV, and so it was the same slot each week, and there was nothing else to watch. Like, when that was on, nothing else was on. Whereas now, you forget about it for a week, and by the time the next week rolls around, there's already been, like, 20 other shows that have crossed your path, and it's really hard to remember what you left off on.
I think the last great, like, collective watch of a show was probably Game of Thrones, and unfortunately, that did not end well. Yeah.
I don't know, from like, I'm not a part of it, but from what I hear, people still really get together over like maths or whatever and like live tweet about it.
God.
Married at First Sight.
Yeah, reality TV is the one remaining.
Is the one thing. Remaining collective watch.
But a lot of those have just gone straight to like streaming services as well.
Yeah, cool.
I'm really glad we were able to like reflect on the series as a whole rather than going into a topic. I think especially like I think I was coming out of it still in like episode by episode season critiquing mode, and I think I almost like surprised myself at like remembering how positive I am about the whole thing, so that's been really nice to end on.
It's hard because we do sit here and we like overanalyze and like did I actually enjoy that because of this, but like deep down we act, I know I said some negative things, everyone said negative things. I think we're all overly positive on this show.
Definitely worth it. I will never stop recommending it to people because unlike Game of Thrones, it didn't end terribly. It ended maybe not as best as we would have liked, but it still ended well, and
but
I still
pretty good
recommend it. Yeah, so thanks for listening along with us. I hope you've enjoyed our discussions. That's the end of the episode for today, and that's the end of Sex Education for us, which is like a little sad to see it go, but you know,
it is very
sad.
We're gonna probably take a couple months off just to like have a break, because we've been going at this almost constantly for like 2 years now, I think. Just kind of evaluate what we want to do with the podcast, where we want to go next. And I mean, if you've got any ideas, send them through. We're gonna have a bit of a brainstorm and see, maybe we'll change the format, or maybe we'll do the same sort of thing but with different content. We're not quite sure. So I guess I hope you've enjoyed it, and thanks for listening, and we'll see you in a little while.
Yeah, big thanks.
Yeah, thank you.
See you guys.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.